Hey everyone, this is Pastor Brian Ross from Grace Life Bible Church in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And I want to come to you with a video today addressing some questions that I've been getting regarding the use of conditional statements in the New Testament. So this isn't the first time I've talked about this. There are other materials available on the church's website that I'm going to put in the description below for more information. So my intent with this video is that this would just be a primer, just a brief introduction to this, and then to provide some more resources in the description below if you want to look at this more deeply. So a number of years ago, because of a doctrinal disagreement that was occurring that I was having with somebody, I was forced to look more deeply into the issue of conditional statements and the different uses conveyed and senses conveyed by the word if. And when I first started looking at that, I looked at it from the standpoint of Greek. And what I uncovered here is that in Greek, there are four different types or classes of conditions, first, second, third, and fourth class conditions. So a first class condition is described as something that's assumed to be true, or if and it's true. So this would be the logical or fact-stating use of the word if. When you use if in this manner, you're not trying to call anything into question. You're trying to establish the absolute connection and relationship between various points. So this would be the use of if that is trying to make an argument, build an argument, or make logical connections between things. A second kind of condition is a second class condition, which is assumed to be false if it's true, but it's not. And then a third class condition is maybe, maybe not, or maybe it is, maybe it isn't, conditional. Or another way to say that would be hypothetical or contingent on the circumstances. And then a fourth class is remotely possible, maybe it's true, but it probably isn't. And this form is rare. So when I first started looking at these things a number of years ago now, I got criticism because I was looking at them from the standpoint of Greek. So then I'm like, okay, well, what about in English? Is there anything that we can look at to see how conditions work in English? And so I started doing some research and looking around, and I decided to look up the word if in the Oxford English Dictionary. So if you look here at the word if, the basic definition is introducing a clause of condition or supposition, the prothesis of a conditional statement. So the prothesis is a technical word of grammar, which is talking about the portion of a statement that contains the word if. Okay. So you might also refer to sometimes as the antecedent, the part of the statement that contains the word if. So if we, for example, just to illustrate what I'm talking about, if we look here at Colossians 3, verse 1, if ye then be risen with Christ, that would be the prothesis, because it's the part of the statement that contains the word if. So if ye then be risen with Christ, seek those things which are above. That would be what's called the apodis in grammar, because it's talking about, well, what's the conclusion of the statement? All right, so I'm just sharing that with you, try to just be clear about it, not try to confuse you with terms. But so that's the basic definition of the word if. Now let's look here. It says, on condition that, given that, or granted that, the case that, supposing that, on supposition that. Now look at number one. With the conditional clause or prothesis in the indicative after if. So if something is in the indicative mood, if the verb after the condition, the word if, is in the indicative mood, right? So the indicative after if implies that the speaker expresses no adverse opinion as to the truth of the statement in the clause and is consistent with his acceptance of it. So if a conditional state, if a condition is followed by the indicative mood, it's consistent with not doubt, but certainty or acceptance, okay? Sorry, my dog is scratching herself at the moment. That's probably the noise you might hear there. So we could see this. Then if we come down to number two, with the conditional clause or prothesis in the subjunctive, okay? And the particular clause or apodis in the indicative or imperative, the subjunctive after if implies that the speaker guards himself from endorsing the truth or realization of the statement and is consistent with his doubt of it. So there we have in English the establishment of two different types of conditions. One, just like the first class condition in Greek, is establishing the logical connection between things when it's indicative, an indicative statement of fact. Second one, when it's subjunctive after if, it is establishing doubt or hypotheticalness or something that needs to be satisfied in order for the terms of the condition to be met. Now we can see this further if we look at the word indicative and check out what that means, because it makes it extremely clear what we're talking about here. And then we'll go look at an example of this in the scriptures. So here we have indicative. Now notice 1a, grammar, that points out, states, or declares, applied to the mood of a verb of which the essential function is to state a relation of objective fact between the subject and the predicate, as opposed to a relation merely conceived, thought of, or wished by the speaker. So here we have the English dictionary establishing for us that conditions in English work the same way they work in Greek. I've also talked to the Spanish teacher at my high school that I work at, as well as the French teacher, and we've had long conversations about these. I think they think I'm like weird or something, probably, but I want to know how does this work in other languages? In Greek and English, it's the same. If a condition is followed by a verb in the indicative mood, see, mood of the verb, then the essential function is to state the objective fact, right? The indicative points out or dictates, here it is, of a form of a statement having the verb in the indicative mood assertive of objective fact, okay? So let's look at this now in the Bible to make sense of this. So we're going to consider here Colossians chapter 3, verse 1. If ye then be risen with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ sitteth at the right hand of God. So when Paul says, if ye then be risen with Christ here, is he saying, maybe you are, maybe you aren't, we have to wait and see? Or is he saying, on the basis of the established fact that you're risen with Christ, seek those things which are above? Okay, so there's a difference there. Now this is the fact stating, this is the indicative fact stating use of the word if. He's saying, on the basis of the fact that you're risen with Christ, seek those things which are above. Now, how do we know that that's a fact? Well, you could go back to chapter 2. Chapter 2 comes before chapter 3. I'm sure you're all well aware of that. But let's just go back to chapter 2 and look at a few things, okay? Let's look at chapter 2, verse 11. In whom also ye are circumcised with a circumcision made without hands, in the putting off of the body of sins of the flesh by the circumcision of Christ, buried with him in baptism. Now watch the next statement. Wherein also ye are risen with him through faith of the operation of God who hath raised him from the dead. So does Colossians chapter 2 verse 12 state as a categorical fact that the believer is risen with Christ? It does right there, Colossians chapter 2 verse 12, right? So now when we come back to chapter 3, let's go back to chapter 3 now and look at verse 1. When we see this statement here, if ye then be risen with Christ, is Paul now all of a sudden saying, well, maybe you're risen, maybe you're not, I'm really not sure, we have to wait and see? Well, obviously that's not what he's saying, because chapter 2 verse 12 established the fact that the believer is risen with Christ, right? So what Paul is doing here is he's saying, on the basis of the fact that you're risen with Christ, seek those things which are above. So this is a fact stating use of the word if. And I just want to show you that we all, if that's true, we ought to be able to confirm that, right? So here is the word if, here's the condition. If, here's the King James text, if ye then, here's the first verb after if, be risen. So risen is the first verb after the condition if, right? So if we go back here, we'll see that it says, applied to the mood of a verb, the essential function is to state the relation of an objective fact between the subject and the predicate, right? So we saw that in English. Now let's just check this and see. So here is the parsing information on this verb, or sorry, on this verb be risen. And notice what mood it's in. It's in the indicative mood. So what does that tell us? That tells us then that this is a condition that is fact stating. It's not creating doubt. It's not a hypothetical situation. It's what we would call in logic a modus ponens statement. If some such thing, then some such thing. And the if there is not the if of doubt, it's the if of logic. So if ye then be risen with Christ, what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to seek those things which are above, right? So that's one explanation, just brief, okay? I'm not just brief. I've got more examples and explanation and some of the other resources I'm going to put in the description here under this video. So let's go look at now a third class condition, and let's go to Romans now. Let's go to Romans chapter 7. Romans chapter 7, and we want to look here at verse 2. Romans chapter 7, verse 2. And we see here, notice what it says. It says, "For the woman which hath an husband is bound by the law to her husband so long as he liveth." Now watch, if the husband be dead, she is loosed from the law of her husband, okay? So on the face value of that, that should sound different to you when you read that than what we just read in Colossians chapter 3, verse 1, right? Colossians 3, verse 1, "If ye then be risen with Christ, seek those things which are above," right? Here we have a situation where it says, "For the woman is bound by the law of her husband as long as her husband liveth." So as long as the husband is alive, according to the way this verse is structured, she's bound to the law of her husband. But if her husband be dead, she's loosed from the law of her husband. So here we see the use of the word if, but there's a conception here that the wife could be loosed from the law of her husband if the husband be dead. So this is a different kind of condition, right? So we already saw, if we go back to the word if here in the dictionary, and we want to go back and look at definition number 2. Okay, so the subjunctive after if implies that the speaker guards himself from endorsing the truth of the realization of the statement and is consistent with his doubt of it. Okay, a conditional clause, this is getting too technical. We don't need to look at that for our purposes. So if we look at then subjunctive, let's look at subjunctive. We can see from the grammar what's going on here. So again, subjunctive, we can see right here in grammar, designating or relating to a verbal mood that refers to an action or state as conceived rather than as fact. So the indicative is conveying a fact rather than as fact, and is therefore used chiefly to express wish, command, exhortation, or a contingent, hypothetical, or prospective event. So notice what it says here about contingent, hypothetical, or prospective event, right? Also of a verb or form belonging to this mood, right? We can come down here, characteristic of what is expressed by the subjunctive mood, contingent, hypothetical. So here we have a situation where it is hypothetical or contingent on the situation, right? So let's go back to Romans 7, 2. For the woman which hath an husband is bound to the law as long as her husband liveth, but if the husband be dead, she is loosed from the law of her husband. So this is a contingent situation, right? The wife, as long as her husband is alive, according to the verse, she's bound to the law of her husband. But if the husband be dead, she's loose from the law of her husband. So the wife being loose is completely contingent on the circumstances of whether or not her husband is alive or dead. If her husband is alive, she's subject to the law of her husband. If her husband is dead, though, she's loose from the law of her husband. And all of that is contingent on the circumstances of life, right? Now, we should, again, be able to confirm that if we dig a little bit deeper, okay? So let's load this up again. And let's look at this verse, right? So here we have if in the second half of the verse, if the husband be dead. So dead would be the verb following the condition if, right? So let's see what we have when we look at that and notice what we have. We have the subjunctive mood. The subjunctive mood, again, is the mood of hypothetical contingency, a prospective event. It's not fact stating. It's not stating a fact like something in the indicative mood. So what we see from this then, guys, is that there are different and various uses of the word if. And every time you encounter the word if in the Bible, when you're doing your Bible study, you need to ask yourself, what type of condition am I dealing with here? Am I dealing with a fact stating condition? Or am I dealing with a condition that is has some contingency, something that has to be satisfied or fulfilled in order for the condition to work? And then you can look at use some of the tools to look a little bit deeper and confirm and really sort of dig into what kind of condition is it and how is the condition working and functioning. So I have found all of this to be extremely helpful and beneficial to me as I've thought about verses. There are some conditions in Paul's epistles, particularly there's one in Colossians chapter 1 that is really hard to kind of understand and wrap your mind around. And I found that using this methodology and understanding how conditions work, understanding how they work in English, how they work in Greek, they work the same way, and then being able to apply that when studying has been exceedingly beneficial. This will also help in passages like 2 Timothy chapter 2, verses 11 through 13 in that faithful saying, because let's just go briefly look at that. We want 2 Timothy chapter 2, and let's just go briefly look at that. And I want to just make one brief comment about that, and then we'll close this video. So there's a traditional view of this. So if we look at this faithful saying here is comprised of four if statements. So it is a faithful saying. For if we be dead, we shall also live with him. If we suffer, we shall also reign with him. If we deny him, he also will deny us. If we believe not, yet he abideth faithful. Now, the traditional way of looking at this is to view this first statement as a statement of fact. For if we be dead with him, we shall also live with him. And this fourth one as a statement of fact. For if we believe not, yet he abideth faithful, he cannot deny himself. So I'm calling that the bookends view. So the view is bookended by a statement of fact in verse 11 and then a statement of fact in verse 12. But then, folks, they come into verse 12 and they read these now as hypothetical conditions. The problem with that is that if you look at these and study them, grammatically, they are all structured the same way. They all have the word if. They are all followed by verbs in the indicative mood. And to me, as I've studied this passage and taught on this back in 2014, I thought it's my contention that that matters a lot to your understanding of this passage. So clarity on how conditions work and how they function is very important. And I will include also in the description some further information if you want to look into the faithful saying here of 2 Timothy chapter 2. Anyway, I hope this was helpful to you. I hope you'll find this beneficial and edifying and just a skill, just a tool to use and to consider as you study your Bible. Thanks for your time.